Welcome into another episode of the NHL at the Rink podcast. And Sean, we've got regular season hockey. We are recording Wednesday, and we had three games on Tuesday. The New York Rangers, they don't look so good, but the Pittsburgh Penguins look all right. The LA Kings don't look so good. Colorado Avalanche look all right. Florida Panthers kind of look like we thought they would. And same with the Chicago Blackhawks. But we got regular season hockey, and we got four more games. We got on Wednesday. We're rolling now, Sean. It's in.
Yesterday was like a holiday. 5 o'clock, making dinner, watching hockey. I felt like I was on the West Coast, man. It was awesome. The weather was nice. It was great. Yeah, it's the start of a very long an exciting season, like it always is, and we're all going to jump to conclusions, right? You talked about it. The Rangers don't look good. Look, it's game one, right? I don't know that that's the Rangers. I don't know how good the Rangers are going to be. I don't have them in the playoffs. So, you know, we talked about our predictions last week on the podcast. You know, I think they're in that what you like to call the mushy middle. but the Penguins surprised me. They had really good structure, I thought. They had enthusiasm. And Dan Muse, their new coach, has a lot of faith in their young players. I was watching that game. There was 2 minutes left, and his rookies were out there.
Yeah, well listen, they need to do that. That's going to be the season for the Pittsburgh Penguins. It's going to be, can they get more out of their younger guys? Can they push these guys? Let's see what they've got. Let's push. Let's see what they've got. It was a nice start for the Pittsburgh Penguins, a 3-0 win. Is this the blueprint? It's sort of the blueprint of how they're going to have to go about it this season. They're not going to overwhelm you, which they didn't. They didn't overwhelm the Rangers. The Rangers, to me, didn't look very good, but they didn't overwhelm the Rangers, but they were just solid. They were structured. They were disciplined. They were in their positions. And that's the sign of a well-coached team. But like you said, Sean, it's one game. There's going to be hard times coming for the Pittsburgh Penguins, but you have to, you want to get off to a strong start. You want to build a little bit of confidence, build a little bit of belief, and they were able to get off to a strong start. Let's see where it goes from here. But I just loved what Dan Muse did on opening night at Madison Square Garden, starting Sidney Crosby, Evgeny Malkin, and Chris Letang. The guys setting a record in their 20th season together. First trio of teammates in North America to play 20 seasons together. And then with them, Ben Kindel, the rookie, Harrison Bernicke, the rookie, both teenagers. Ben Kindel wasn't born yet when these three played their first game together. I thought that was a really good imagery, I wrote it. It was like a metaphor of what they want this Penguins team to be this season. They're trying to blend these eras together and start of a new one and try to continue the old one. And for one night, at least, it was good.
Yeah, and you forgot the wild card, which is the goalie Silvos.
Silovs.
The Latvian.
Yes.
You never know with Latvian goalies. They can be awesome and they can be bad. And last year he was bad, right? He gave up 6 goals in the season opener. Demko was hurt when he was in Vancouver and he completely lost the plot and he had to go to the minors and he won a championship there, you know, and he came back. He looked great last night. If he's going to be good for them, if they have a goalie that they can depend on and they're as structurally defensively sound as they were, which is a huge question mark with their blue line, things look a little different.
Yeah, listen, I mean, they may be hard to play against. That I think, is a big goal here for the Penguins this season. For one night, they were. Listen, we got Nick Kotsanika and Tom Galitti. We're going around the league with two of our colleagues. Nick Kotsanika will be coming up here shortly. He is in Vegas for their season opener there for Mitch Marner's debut, which is tonight, Wednesday night. He was previously in Utah, caught up with those guys and saw their practice rink and was at Arizona State, Arizona State University. I'm not going to say anything negative, even though I went to the University of Arizona. But Nick was at Arizona State University for Gavin McKenna's debut with Penn State. So we do that with him. Tom Galitti, all about the Capitals on the Metro. That stuff is coming up as well. So, Sean, I do want to go out west, though. I mean, the late game on opening night. So the Colorado Avalanche looked pretty good. The LA Kings, I didn't pick the LA Kings to make the playoffs. And I wonder, I didn't pick them to make the playoffs because I didn't know if they would have enough offense. And I do wonder about them being able to be as good defensively and in net as they were last season. For one night, that pick looks okay. Not good for the LA Kings, however. Do you think it could be an issue here for the Kings being able to generate enough and keep it out the way they did last year? Or is it just that they ran into a really good team in the Colorado Avalanche that was hungry and ready to play and their best players were their best players?
I think it's mostly the latter, right? It's the home opener. Everybody's jacked up for it. You know, McKinnon and McCarr had great games. Congratulations to Nathan McKinnon, the highest scoring Colorado Avalanche player. He passed Joe Sakic. He hasn't passed Joe Sakic's franchise record, which partially was done with the Quebec Nordiques, and it'll be a while before he does that. But congratulations to him for being the all-time Avalanche leading scorer. You know, I picked the Kings to be first in the division. I don't think it's this team that's going to be first. Ken Holland's their GM, and I think there's going to be some moves made to shore up what he sees as their weaknesses to make another run at it. And, you know, hopefully not play Edmonton in the first round and get past that. But, you know, I wasn't too troubled with their game. Like, you're going to have games like that. I look at them and you know, I think Brandt's going to make a huge jump this year on the blue line. Anderson, all those guys, and Drew Doughty's playing for the Olympics, so he's going to be good. You know, their goaltending is what their goaltending is, and up front, I think they're going to be okay. So I just think it was a one night thing. Although I will say, their starting schedule, the NHL didn't do them many favors, right? They go into Vegas for another opener tonight in a brutal building with all kinds of hype going on against what many people think will be this Stanley Cup representative from the West. And then they play, I think, a 12:30 game on Saturday or an early game on Saturday. So it is not a conducive schedule to getting off to a fast start and feeling good about yourself.
No, I mean, you think about it, right? So They open up against Colorado, then they got Vegas, Winnipeg, Minnesota on the road. That's their next three games. So, no, it is not conducive for the LA Kings before they come back home. It's not conducive for the LA Kings to get off to a good start. And I have a lot of reservations and questions about that team. But on the other side of opening night for them in that game was Marty Natchez. And now, look, we're looking at contracts happening right now, right? So the McDavid contract is a bit of an outlier. That's all about winning. Two-year deal, $25 million, 12.5 just continues. It's an extension. It opens a three-year window. We can argue all we want. Is that the right move? What does it mean? All that stuff. McDavid did what McDavid wanted to do. But Marty Natchez has scores two goals on opening night in L.A., That is going to be a very interesting one because he is a player that is going to be due for a big payday. And there's Cale Makar coming up for a big payday in a couple of years, right? And you already have McKinnon. Yes, the cap is going up, but they didn't keep Rantanen, right? They traded Rantanen to get Marty Natchez. And now they're in the same situation with Natchez, and Natchez could have a monster year for this team playing with Nathan McKinnon. That's going to be a very interesting one to watch, in my opinion, Sean.
It certainly will, but I don't think they're in any rush to do anything, right? Like, let's see how it plays out. And if they're in the same boat, maybe do the same thing again, right? Like, keep on trying to upgrade that position. I don't think that the Colorado Avalanche feel like they're pressured to do anything.
But they traded Rantanen to get Natchez. I don't know if they upgraded. It's not, listen, Natchez is a heck of a player. Rantanen is, you know, he's one of the best players in the league and proven to be so. So, but then the more you continue down this road, at some point it's not going to work out for you. You know what I mean? Like, that's the concern I have for this, for the Colorado Avalanche, is that can they trade, you know, if they wait. Let's put it this way. If they continue to wait, and this guy puts up monster numbers, the dollars figure is only going to go up. He's not providing any type of hometown discount, I want to win discount. He's going to try to get his, is my opinion, and as is his right to do so. And so the longer they wait, they run that risk. okay, you run that risk. Well, we can look to trade him again. Is that trade going to be there again? Like, that, is that Rantanen trade going to be there again? That's going to be an interesting. I don't know about that one either. So, to me, there is a little bit of a pressure point here. He looks like he fits. I would imagine the opportunity to continue to play with Nathan MacKinnon is enticing to a player like Marty Natchez. The opportunity to continue to play on a winning team is enticing. So I would imagine he likes the fit too. I don't know where it goes, but the longer they wait, they do run the same risk of running into the Rantanen situation that they were in last year. And I don't know that they can make that type of deal again.
To me, they're the Edmonton Oilers. They have their two guys. It's Makar and MacKinnon. And they're just going to build around them. And anybody else that gets in the way, they're going to have to... Look, when you invest that much money in your star players, there are things that are going to go by the wayside. They don't in Edmonton because Connor McDavid did everybody a solid, unexpectedly, yeah. Right? He left $5 million to $7 million on the table. That's a Marty Natchez, or a good portion of a Marty Natchez, right? That's not going to happen in Colorado. Hard decisions have to be made. If he plays so well that they want to sign him to a new deal and it becomes too cost prohibitive, there's going to be a market for Natchez. It's that simple. Somebody is going to look at him and say, I can win the cup with him, a la the Dallas Stars, and say, you know, here's what I'm going to pony up. So that's kind of the way I look at it. But who knows? I mean, it's a long way in the future, and he's got to continue to produce, which I don't think will be an issue. He has, you know, the whole time he was in Carolina, I thought he was one of the most underrated players in the league. I think he'll be a little more rated in Colorado.
Yeah, well, yeah, and that, I think that's just going to keep running the price up, and I think that's where that situation, there's going to be some pressure points there, and that's my opinion in that situation. We both talked about it. McDavid, are you surprised? Were you surprised by the Connor McDavid contract?
No, not at all. I was surprised by the term at first, and then after I thought about it a while, I'm like, I get it. He's got another big payday ahead of him. At least one. Let's say one if he goes max deal 7 years with his next contract. Like he said, his dog's not going to starve. So Lenny's going to be in good dog food, good kibble for the next 3 years. And it opens the window, right? It's the Tom Brady move. Let me leave some money on the table so you can give me some weapons to win with, and I can add another ring to my fingers, except he's trying to add the first ring to his fingers. And then, you know, we get 2 years from this year and it doesn't happen, then he can reconfigure what he wants to do. And I don't think it tarnishes his reputation at that point. Right? He's put down the gauntlet and said, I'm giving us 3 years. I'm looking at the team around us, where we are age-wise, where we are experience-wise. This window is 3 years. If it doesn't happen in 3 years, we're entering a different phase of the organization. And then I get to decide what I want to do. I'm giving you every opportunity to do what you want to do for the next 3 years with me at my best at a discounted rate. Now go figure it out.
McDavid did what we as sports fans want all of our best players on our team to do. He took less to give the team a better chance to win. He's all about the team. He's all about winning. And he fully understands that it's okay because if he wins, well, it'll have worked out. He's still paid very well. And if it doesn't work out, well, he did his part, and we know he's going to do his part on the ice, and it just didn't work out, and then he's still going to get a huge payday in his next deal, or maybe another one like this to continue down the path of trying to win. This is what we want. This is what, as sports fans, we always want. We want these guys to buy in a team sport. We want them to buy in and do the best that they can do for the team. And in the name of winning. And that's what Connor McDavid has done. I don't think it has a negative impact on anyone else around the league. I think he's separate from that. I think everybody understands what he's done. I don't think it's going to creep into negotiations down the road for other people when where GMs are going to have a leg to stand on. Well, look what Connor McDavid did, and the other guy's going to be like, yeah, that's Connor McDavid, and that's the Edmonton Oilers and whatnot, and that we're not doing that. And then we're going to still be able to go out in free agency. If you don't want to sign us, we're going to go out in free agency, and I'm going to get my money elsewhere. That's the way it's going to go. It's a little bit different, but he did what we want all of our professional sports, you know, athletes the best to do. Take a little bit less to give the team a better chance to win. And if you do that, well, you're a legend forever.
Well, we need to, speaking of legends, we need to get to Nick Konstantinka in 1 second, but I have a real problem with that. Like, I have a real problem with that. He does what we as sports fans want him to do. Like, what a horrible thing. Like, he's what? Better than everybody else because he left money on the table? Like, he's some sort of saintly figure because he left money on the table? Like, and I brought up Tom Brady, and I'm a Patriot fan, and I thought that was great. But at some point, it's up to the organization to figure it out. Why is it on Connor McDavid?
He's helping. That's all he's doing. He's helping the organization. The organization has to figure it out. But by doing what he's doing, he's lending his hand to help the organization figure it out. That's how I look at it.
But it's not up to him.
No, but it is. But it is, because he controlled this negotiation. It was 100% up to him. And he could have taken more, and nobody would have batted an eye. Nobody would have blinked. Nobody would have said a word. He could have taken $18 million a year and have been like, yeah, well, that makes sense. That's what Connor McDavid's worth. Look what Kaprizov just got. But he didn't. So he lended his hand in support of the organization in the name of winning. He didn't have to do that. The organization isn't begging him to do that. They're appreciative of it. It's still on the Edmonton Oilers as an organization to go out and continue to put a winning team together. And McDavid's the biggest part of that. But he lent his support to do that. I have no issue with that at all. And he didn't have to do it. He wasn't strong-armed to do it. He did it what seems like willingly.
I don't have an issue with it either. I think it's great, but I don't think it's something that he should be extolled for over other players that go and get their money.
No,
like,
no,
I don't think any less of Kaprizov because of what he did, but that's how it was presented. Like, that he's the ideal.
He did what, as a sports fan, we want our team. To see, because he gave the team a chance. We root for teams. We root for players, and we root for teams.
I would have no issue either way.
Well, as sports fans, we root for players and root for teams. Listen, I think we're agreeing and disagreeing at the same time about the same subject, and it's kind of going nowhere. So let's go somewhere. Let's go out to Las Vegas, where Nick Konstantinka is, our colleague, our columnist for NHL.com, covering the Golden Knights, did a little Utah, Gavin McKenna, and we touched on all those topics with Nick. Here is our interview with Nick Konstantinka. Nick, thanks so much for joining us from your second home. You got Mitch Marner debuting in Vegas. I know you were able to chat with him in practice the other day, and the connection they're trying to build with Jack Eichel. What's the feeling there with Vegas and Mitch right now, and the expectation is as well?
One thing you notice walking into the dressing room, there's no media. He's got to love it. Like, I'm serious. Like, after Toronto, the vibe could not be more different. Like, it's relaxed. It's upbeat. It's quiet for him. Like, there's just not a lot of demands on him like there were in Toronto. And this is a team that is unabashedly pursuing the Stanley Cup. You know, that's what they talk about. We're here to win the cup. So, and now he's on a line with Jack Eichel, right? These are two guys who are in the top 10 in scoring, top 6 in assists last year. You know, on paper, it looks like it's going to be amazing. On the ice, we'll see. But, like, a lot of good things for Mitch Marner right now.
What, if anything, is the challenge of that pairing?
I think it's them deferring to each other, right? These are two elite playmakers. They're passers, right? They can't pass the puck into the net, right? Mitch Marner shows up. He's the new guy. He defers to Eichel. Eichel He sees Marner. He's the new guy. He defers to Marner, right? Like somebody's going to shoot the puck. So Ivan Barbashev is a left wing on that line. He's more of a net front presence guy than like a shooter. Eichel and Marner are going to have to figure that out, right? That to me is the complication. But it's a nice problem to have, right? To have two elite, really smart, skilled players together.
You know what's interesting to me is that when Mitch Marner was in Toronto, it felt like the pressure was on his shoulders, right? I mean, all the pressure in the
Right.
world is on his shoulders as being at home in Toronto, trying to get the Maple Leafs over the hump and all of that stuff, the constant disappointments in the playoffs. Now he goes to Vegas and it seems like the pressure's off. But he's got an 8-year, $96 million contract that he's got to live up to. So does this feel like different pressure for Mitch Marner now?
I think that's exactly it, right? It's not no pressure. I mean, this is a team that expects to win the Stanley Cup. And also, if you look, like they brought in stars and they've gotten rid of stars, before too. They're pretty ruthless in Vegas. But I think it's different pressure. It's not like he didn't play with great players in Toronto. I mean, he was surrounded, with great players in Toronto. He'll be surrounded with great players here too. But it's a different vibe, right? Like, I don't think he's expected to be the guy. He's expected to be one of the guys, one of the headliners. I think it's just a different situation. The pressure is internal, maybe more than external.
So, speaking of great players, Nick, I want to go back a couple of days on your world tour to start the season. You were in Tempe for the Gavin McKenna debut. Just your thoughts, that's your first time seeing him play and where he's at in the developmental cycle. Obviously, everybody knows that he's the consensus number one at this point to go in the 2026 draft, but it was quite a night for Penn State and Arizona State.
First thought is it was so great to see a Penn State and Arizona State hockey game in a building that was full with a student section that was on its feet and chanting like I, I got my start covering Michigan hockey in the 90s. Never would have dreamed that that this would happen. Those programs didn't exist. So first of all, shout out to Arizona State and Penn State for that. The first thing I noticed about Gavin McKenna is just how smooth he is. He's smooth, he's calm, he's skilled, he stick handles in traffic effortlessly, whips passes through seams. He's not a burner, right? Like he doesn't wow you with his speed. He's not a McDavid. He's a McKenna. And I think the comp to me is Patrick Kane, right? Like he reminds me of Patrick Kane a bit. He had two highlight reel assists to start off his debut. Keeps a puck in at the blue line, skates in the slot, freezes the defender and the goalie, and then dishes it, and the guy has an open net, right? That's his first assist. So right there, you see what he brings. I thought what was interesting about game two, you saw a little bit about why he's in college, right? He needs to get bigger. He's 6 foot 170, I think, is what he's listed at. He needs to get bigger. He needs to get stronger. So I think the college schedule will allow him to spend more time in the weight room. He's going to play bigger, stronger players. So in that game, he gets out muscled on one play. He gets knocked off the puck, cross checks a guy, takes a bad penalty. So now he's sitting in the box. It's 2-0 Arizona State in the third period. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm glad I'm not writing tonight. Like, how would I write this one? Right? Well, Penn State comes back, power play at the end of the third. And I'm thinking to myself, you know what this is setting up for. I actually said to a colleague next to me, this is setting up for McKenna to score the winner. Then he's in the right circle, one timer, blast it, scores. And then we saw something I didn't know about McKenna. He's a little spicy, right? He's got some fire to him. The crowd had been giving it to him all weekend, right? Booing him when he touched the puck. Second game, they're chanting overrated. Gavin stinks, not that word. And he gives them the forks down. And then when the final horn goes, he goes to the glass and just raps on the glass to the student section, like, gotcha. So I ask him after. I said, saw a little emotion come out there. And he just goes, yeah, they were giving it to me all weekend. I thought I'd give it back to him. Lots going on that weekend. It was a lot of fun and a great story.
So you saw the skill, and you just described it really well, and you saw what he's capable of doing, and maybe some of the reason, like you said, why he's in college. What was your sense of how he handles it all? How is this kid going to handle all of the attention? He's handled it a little bit now, but now he's, you know, it's a little bit more of a national spotlight in a college atmosphere. How the draft is coming up. How do you think he handles all of this?
Well, for a 17-year-old, I think extremely well. And his coach and his teammates will tell you that. Look, I only spent 2 nights, you know, watching him. It's not like I know the kid, but everybody around him says he handles it really well. But I will say this, that second game, like, it's going to be hard. Like, it's going to be emotional. Like, you know, Arizona State went after him physically. He got frustrated. He took a bad penalty. Then he scores the big goal and he gives it back to the crowd, right? Like, this is going to happen all year. Like, every team he plays, he's going to have a target on his back. They're going to try to rough him up. You know, the opposing fans are going to know who he is and they're going to ride him. And he's going to have to, this will be a test for him to sort of manage those emotions and control those things. But he's 17, right? So I think on the whole, he seems to handle it very well.
Last thing I wanted to ask you about is it's twofold, right? You started this trip in Utah for a preseason game and their new look building. But I think tied into that is not only a new look building, but new look or new found aspirations. I'm curious, you know, what your thoughts were of what the Smiths have done with the building and, you know, kind of where they are this year in their aspirations of getting to the playoffs.
The best way I can describe Utah, sort of like, on the ice and off, still a work in progress, right? Like, this is, they're like full speed ahead. And the paint's still drying on the roster, right? So they're shooting for the playoffs. They want to make the playoffs. It's, you know, off the ice, the game rink, seeing it from 6 months ago, the lower bowl is completely different. They blew out two end zones. Like, they have really steep end zone seats that are going to be awesome view. Maybe a little difficult to get to your seat, but once you're in it, it's going to be kind of like nowhere else in the league. And then they have this practice facility that is just absurd. Like, I got a nice little tour of that place, and it's like, you know, they're like, we want this to feel residential. I'm like, doesn't feel like my residence. it's like a model home. It's like a mansion, right? Like, it's a millionaire's residence or a billionaire's residence. Like, it's, place is gorgeous. So, you know, with that, I think one of the things I heard from people is no excuses. Like, we have given you everything you need. There's talent on this roster. It's time to win, right? So, and I heard that not just from like management, but from players.
Well, and that's why I think there's going to be some pressure points on the Utah Mammoth early this season. Like, they're going to need to get off to a good start. They're going to need to prove that they can be that type of team, or you're going to be looking at them and there's going to be questions and there's going to be, hey, do we need to make changes here? Because this isn't just the team that's trying to build anymore, right? I mean, they are still the team that's trying to build, but there's more now.
Well, but here's the rub, okay? They're still really young. And they're in a division that had five teams ahead of them make the playoffs last year, right? So Winnipeg, Colorado, St. Louis, Minnesota, Dallas, like, those teams aren't going anywhere, right? So they could be better and have a really good year and still not get in, right? Mm-hmm. So that's the rub. But like, this is an up-and-coming team. There's a lot of talent. There's a lot of resources. You know, to me, it should get better and better and better.
Great, Nick. Good luck in Vegas, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks, boys. Appreciate it.
Good stuff there from Nick, who is in Las Vegas covering their opener, Mitch Marner's debut with the Vegas Golden Knights Wednesday night. We got Tom Galitti coming up here shortly, but first, wanted to dive into my mailbag, Sean, and I got two questions I wanted to throw at you as well. One, the first question is the pressure point on the, it's about the Vancouver Canucks. And the pressure point that's on the Vancouver Canucks, are they feeling it? What is it? Brock Besser is signed. They've got their team. They've got their core. What's the pressure point on the core of the Vancouver Canucks? And my point was, well, it's Quinn Hughes, right? I mean, Quinn Hughes has got this year and next year on his contract. And they were not a good team last year. They went through a lot of drama last year. And they need to have a bounce back year to essentially, for lack of a better term, prove to their captain that they are going in the right direction. And their captain is a big part of proving it, no question about it. But the Canucks, if they struggle again this year, if you don't see bounce back from especially a player like Elias Pettersson, you wonder about Quinn Hughes and his future in Vancouver. It's obviously a big talking point, but that's the pressure point, isn't it?
Well, of course, the pressure point, and again, this is very similar to the conversation we had before we came out of the break, right? Like, what are you going to do to keep your star players? So that is the pressure point. Quinn Hughes is a huge part of that team. They're never going to replace him, whether they trade him, whatever they do with him. They're not getting a Quinn Hughes back. But I would argue that the pressure point is Thatcher Demko.
Okay.
Right? He's signed. You know, that's not the issue. The issue is, he's their goalie. They're going to go as far as he goes, and he's gone nowhere for a couple of years now because of injuries, right? He's angry that he didn't get invited to Olympic camp. You know, if you did this list 2 years ago, of course he would have been on it. He was the brightest young American goalie there was, and his career's been derailed by injuries and chronic injuries, like not freak injuries. It's core stuff, you know, that sometimes goalies struggle with their whole careers. So to me, if they want to go anywhere, and it's kind of a weird dichotomy because you have a brand new coach who's never coached in the NHL in Adam Foote. So it seems like there would be some sort of a leash, you know, some sort of a grace period, but it doesn't seem like there can be that grace period. And I think all of it rides on the shoulders of Thatcher Demko. If he's not good, if he's hurt, they're not good and they're going to be hurting.
And that's fair. And it all goes to the point of the Quinn Hughes discussion. Like that's where it goes. At the end of the day, that is where it goes. But the Canucks obviously can't be thinking about just Quinn Hughes and his future. They got to be thinking of a bounce back after last season. And there's a lot of bounce back. That's a lot of guys in that room that have to bounce back for it to work, for them to be a better team than they were a year ago, for the path to be brighter, and then for Quinn Hughes to believe in it and want to stay in Vancouver. So there's a lot of pressure points right there for the Canucks. The other question,
But I also think, I don't think it matters how good the Vancouver Canucks are. I think, you know, we talked about Connor McDavid and what he did. Quinn Hughes is going to do what Quinn Hughes does. The Vancouver Canucks could go to the Western Conference Final and Quinn Hughes could say, I'm going to play out my contract. I have other things I want to do with my career. I don't think you could tie the two of them together.
Well, I think if they fall flat on their faces this year, it certainly has a better chance of going in the wrong direction for the Canucks.
It gives him an easier out.
It gives him
that's
an out.
All it does.
Fair. It does give him an out. The other question, and it also relates to contracts. So Jackson Lacombe and Luke Hughes, Lacombe with the Ducks and Hughes with the Devils re-sign. They're at $9 million per on separate deals. Where do you see Lane Hutson landing if those guys are at $9 million and Hudson's coming off the Calder Trophy?
Right above them, right? I think he slots in right above them. First of all, I'm so glad that Jackson Lacombe got the deal that he got. He's such an underrated defenseman. He plays out west. Nobody really, a lot of people don't pay attention to him. You know, last year when we did our final trophy trackers, not many people paid attention to him. And he had a great year, and you want to lock up your young defensemen because they're just going to get better, right? I think that's the case with Luke Hughes. You know, Jack at Player Media Tour last month talked about how Luke is growing into being a number one defenseman for them. And look, that's some sibling pride there, but I don't think he's that far off. I think that's the projection. And I kind of look at Luke's deal like I look at Jack's deal right now, right? If you look at it now and it's a little hard to take. You look at it 3 years from now, and it's going to be a bargain, right? Jack's deal right now compared to his peers is a budget deal, yeah. And it wasn't a few years ago. So I think Montreal is in that window where they're going to start getting better, and they're going to need to lock Hutson up, and he's going to ask for more. He's going to say, look, I have this shiny piece of hardware, and I was the guy who really drove us to the playoffs for the first time in a long time, and I've revitalized the city as far as hockey goes. You're going to need to give me more than those guys.
And here's the beauty of it for the Canadians. They're in such a good contractual position with their top guys. Suzuki, Caulfield, and Slavkovsky are all under $8 million a year right now. They're, you know, Dobson is their highest paid player right now at 9.5, and you can see Hudson coming in just a shade above that. I think their goaltending is in a good position as well. Not paying a lot of money for that goaltending. They are in a really strong position here to pay a player like Lane Hudson a contract, you know, that in his second deal he's essentially earned at this point. My only concern is the fact that he's 5'9", 160 pounds, and he's 21 years old. Like, that is, like, he's coming off a great year. He's slippery. He's good. It's just a legitimate concern. The size-wise, I think, is a concern over the course, you know, of, you know, a long-term deal. His injuries pile up, whatever it might be, because of his size. But you can't go with that right now. I mean, he's earned it, and he should be getting more than those other guys because, frankly, he's been better.
How many times did you see Lane Hudson get hit last year?
Yeah, no, not very often. You're right. You're right. It's why I said he's slippery.
It's a different league. Like, that's prehistoric thinking that, you know, the small guy is going to come into the league and he's going to get manhandled. That's not the way the NHL works anymore. No. It's a speed league.
No, you're right. You're right. It is. I think the size is slight concern, but he can't go with that. And I got to tell you, I before we get to Tom Gallitti, Tom is coming up here in a few seconds, but I mentioned this to point it out. You talk about a prehistoric way of thinking, and you're probably right about that. Tuesday night at Madison Square Garden, I saw it. You see it all the time now in the league. Sam Carrick could have gone for a big hit, a huge open ice hit in the defensive zone, Carrick for the Rangers. But instead what he did is he bumped the show, you know, bumped the guy off the puck, and instead of blowing, I forget who it was, but he separated the guy from the puck in a way that, you know, was not dangerous for anybody. That's the behavior change that we see around the league, and we see it all the time now, and it's now become the norm. So maybe you're right. Maybe that what I said about the Lane Hudson is not as big of a factor anymore.
Well, two things. What happened to the puck? It went the other way.
Went the other way.
Yep. Right? There wasn't a sexy ooh and ah. There wasn't a Matt Rempe moment where the boards are rattling. And he, the idea of hitting somebody is to gain possession of the puck, not to put them on their butt. With that said, once we get to the playoffs, different game, right? Then you're spending 2 months trying to run a D. You're throwing the puck into his corner, trying to bash him for seven games to get that advantage. But I think that's a highly specialized thing that doesn't really play into an 82-game season. But way back in the day, before all the equipment and everything else, the idea of a body check was to neutralize the other guy and send the puck in the opposite direction. And everybody fell in love with the Rock'em Sock'em big hits, and those ruled the day for a long time. But now I think players are being taught at a very young age, and there's all kinds of deterrents at this point that you're seeing some of the graceful hitting come back into the game.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. I think you see it on a nightly basis. And Lane Hudson's a very graceful skater. Tom Gallitti is a graceful guest. Full of grace. And we're going to go to Tom right now, talk Capitals, Metropolitan Division with him. Here is our interview with our senior writer, Tom Gallitti. Tom, thanks so much for jumping on with us. So, realistically, what's your projection for the Washington Capitals as they open the season against the Boston Bruins tonight, Wednesday night, on TNT and HBO Max?
Well, I think it's going to be an interesting season. They didn't make a lot of changes in the offseason, so this could be, you know, I think that they're going to be right in the mix in the Metropolitan Division again. Maybe they won't win division, finish first in the regular season, but I still think they're going to be one of the top teams in their division. They're going to need some guys who had careers last year to match that, or you know, maybe some might not, but then others maybe exceed that. So it's going to be an interesting year, I think, just as far as, you know, they're a team that they've heard the outside noise of people saying, oh, they can't do it again. Last year was an aberration, and I think that is one of the things that's motivating them early in the season.
What about Alex Ovechkin? I mean, there's still so much on the table for him. 3 goals from 900. Does he have another huge season in him? At what point do we say this is the end?
Well, it's a good question. This is the last year of his contract, and he's still not saying whether this is going to be the end or not. I mean, it's definitely a possibility. I think he's still motivated. You mentioned the 900 goals. That's one of the things that he definitely has on his radar, and he's very close. He could do it tonight. He could do it in the first week of the season, so, but then the other things is 1,500 games. He's 9 away. I think he's like 20 points from breaking to the top 10 in points. Those are things that I think interest him. But most of all, I think it's, to win again. And they had a good team last year that, lost in the second round to Carolina. And he wants to try to win this year. He wants to see the Capitals be better. And he wants to be part of that. So I think that's the thing that's driving him most now. And maybe, how he feels and how the team does are going to be determining factors as he, whether he continues to play beyond the season.
You know, it last season, I think, and you've written this too, and so much was driven by Ovechkin's chase for Gretzky's record, and I think the team really fed off of that. And you looked at guys, Strome and Dubois and Wilson and Chychrun. They all had career years, and it was all based around this one. You know, their captain, their teammate, going after something historic. That's gone now. So does it just returned to simple motivation to try to win again, and is that enough in Washington? How does that kind of manifest itself that they don't have that right now?
That's a good question. I know when I talked to Spencer Carberry this summer, like even a month before training camp, he was saying that, for him, that's like his biggest challenge to get them to focus. That was a big part, like you said, of their season last year. And he needs to get them to focus on the how important winning is. And this is a team that was as consistent as any during the regular season. They lost 3 in a row regulation once. That's it. That's why they ended up where they were. They were in really no. They had some lulls, but they weren't terrible lulls. And part of that was because they couldn't. What to keep Alex in a situation to break the record. They had to play well. They had to put him in situations to win. And so they're gonna have to find, I don't want to say outside motivation. They just have to find more of a team motivation ahead of individual motivation. Alex, it shows how much they respected him also, how much he means to the team, how much they want to do it for him. But now they have to do it as a team to win. And it's gonna be, it's what every team is trying to do every year, right? So you have to go through your ups and downs of the season, and they're going to have to try to find their motivation to fight through when there might be some lulls.
Is everyone sleeping on Ryan Leonard? We did our trophy trackers. We're in the midst of doing our trophy trackers this week. We kicked it off with the Calder. Demidov from the Canadiens, overwhelming favorite. Is he a player that's kind of going under the radar at this point?
I think a little bit. Last year he jumped in at the end of the season, and that's a challenge, right? Like to jump from the NCAA into the, basically, he jumped in with a week left in Ovi's goal record chase and then went right into the playoffs. So that was tough. And he didn't produce. He had one goal in the regular season, which is an empty netter. And I think he had one assist in the playoffs. So people probably looked at that and didn't say, oh, well, what's he going to do? I do think that him having a camp, having a summer to learn from that and then, and prepare for this season and have a regular camp. His first, never had a pro camp in his life because he went straight from Boston College into that. Preseason games, I think you saw his confidence growing as the preseason games went on. I saw a different player. I know it's only preseason, but you saw the kind of player that you saw at BC and when you saw him in World Juniors, that's kind of a little bit agitator. They're really working with him and trying to get to net, be a play like a power forward. He's gonna have to get stronger as he gets older. He's only 20. But I do think he's gonna have an impact for the Capitals this year. He's gonna play in the top nine. He might get some power play time. He's gonna have some opportunities he didn't have last year. But he's also going to have to, a lot they're probably burdening him more with, last year they said just go and play. He's going to have to play within the, play with what they're doing within their system and things like that. But I do think he could be among the top rookies this year. I think there maybe is a little sleeping on him. But if you had like asked people last April, he probably would have been higher in some rankings because before he joined the Capitals, people saw this as a pretty high prospect for the NHL.
Tom, I wanted to go back to a previous answer. We were talking about Carberry and the motivation and, finding that for Washington. And it was so much about Ovechkin last season, and rightfully so. I wonder now that, Ovechkin is not chasing a record anymore. And I think we can all agree that, barring something catastrophic, he's going to score 3 goals at some point to get to 900, and he'll play 9 games to get to 1500. Does he play less this season? He played almost 18 minutes a game last year.
That's something definitely to watch. A lot of his time is power play time. Like his first preseason game, he hadn't played. He had a minor lower body injury that kept him out of practice for a bit there. And then he came in his first preseason game. He was like 21 minutes, but that's because they had 9 minutes on power play. But so he's gonna get his minute. I think it's gonna depend on how the game goes. I think we could see maybe a little lesser minutes. At even strength, but still using them as much on the power play. So depend. I think it'll go from game to game, how much power play time they have, how he's playing, how the team is playing. whether they need goals, what they're gonna, this is one of the challenges for Spencer Carberry always talk about, putting him in situations last year when he's chasing the record to score goals. They're still gonna want to do that, right? So offensive zone starts, things like that. But you also have to, it also depends on how the team plays.
You talked about them maybe not being the elite team in the division or the conference, but being in the mix. How do you see the Metro playing out?
I think Carolina right now is would be, I think I, we did our picks. I picked Carolina to finish first in the division. They had Ehlers, they added Kendra Miller. They're going to still have to figure out some things, how everything fits there. But I like their team, and they've been a good team in the regular season. The Capitals finished first last year and were driven all year long. I think Carolina kind of saw things, where they went to the playoffs. They were comfortable being in second. But I think Carolina will be the top team. And then I think you're going to think some, looking at a bounce back year for the Rangers. I don't know if they'll be the best team in the division, but I think they're going to be right in the playoff mix. I think the Devils, if they, always the question with them is staying healthy with Jack Hughes and some other guys. They lost Markstrom for a long time, a bunch of games last year. If they're healthy, they're right in the mix too. It's going to be, I think those four teams, I'm interested to see what the Islanders look like this year. I think they've, adding Schaefer and some other things, and, Patrick Waugh, another year under the belt, no more Lou Lamoriello calling the shots there. So it'll be interesting to see with them. I think they could, Barzal might, having Matthew Barzal help healthy would also help, is also going to help them a lot, I think.
They're the team I can't quite figure out, and they haven't played a game yet, so you can't figure them out. I understand that, but like they're the team that I can't quite figure out. I don't know what to expect from the New York Islanders. There's maybe a little bit of a freedom there that the rules have been loosened a little bit with Lou Lamoriello not there anymore. Though can't argue with Lou Lamoriello's success as a general manager in this league. Barzal's back, Schaefer. Is he going to last? Is he going to be able to survive in the league as a, this young player, who didn't play that much in junior hockey last year? What's they have good goaltending, but is it good enough? Is there enough scoring? Like, they're the team that I just can't quite figure out.
Yeah, I'm interested. It's going to be one of those things where you're going to have to watch them the first month, right, and see what Schaefer's impact is. Like you meant, he hardly played last year. And anyway, now he's jumping into potentially 82 games, and if everything goes well, he's playing 82 games in the regular season in the NHL against men. So that's going to be, a long grind for him, and you're going to have to like take checks on him month by month, I think, just to see where, it gets harder as the season goes on. But I think it's exciting for them to have him, and it'll be interesting to see how they improve. I think Barzal is going to be a big part of what they do this year. But like you said, where is he back at center this year? Apparently he is. And I think those are things to watch for the Islanders. And like I failed to say Columbus, and obviously they were right on the board, right there last year making the playoffs. So they're kind of in a similar situation, I think, to the Capitals, as people like, can they repeat what they did last year and maybe push it over the top and get into a playoff spot?
It should certainly be interesting for sure in the Metro across the league. It all kicked off last night and continues tonight. Thanks for joining us, Tom. I'm sure we'll have you on again as Ovi makes more news and enjoy the season.
I'm looking forward to the puck drop tonight.
Good stuff there from Tom Galitti. So, Sean, to close it out here, we're doing our trophy trackers this week on NHL.com. The five that we do is the Calder Trophy for Rookie of the Year, the Norris Trophy Best Defenseman, Jack Adams Best Coach, Vezina for the goalie, and Hart for the MVP. We touched on the Calder with Tom. You mentioned that you're the only one that had Ryan Leonard and everybody else had Ivan Demidov, which means I had Demidov. I'm not going to argue with you on that one. I don't think you'll argue with me on Demidov either with the amount that we have. It could be a really interesting Calder race this year. A bunch of good names in there. Matthew Schaefer, by the way, is one of them, makes his NHL debut Thursday night in Pittsburgh. The Norris, but let's plow right past the Calder. Let's go to the Norris. We talked about him before. I had Quinn Hughes as my Norris Trophy winner this year ahead of Makar and Hedman. I did have Lane Hutson fourth on my list, by the way, and Heiskanen was fifth. But where'd you go with Norris Trophy?
I had Cale Makar.
How dare you?
Look, I over the last 3 years, it's kind of gone back and forth. It's minute. The margins are so fine between these two players. It's just unbelievable to watch them. I just think, Cale is for a lot of the reasons we talked about in the earlier segment, right? With the stars that Colorado has and how high powered their offense is. And congratulations to Landeskog. He made it back in the playoffs last year, but this was his first regular season game in 3 years, and what a great story. And that just adds another element to them and Makar's ability to kind of pile up points. And I think he's better in his own end than he's been given credit for. A lot of that is because he always has the puck and he rarely has to defend. But Yeah, I think it's Makar, but it like I said, I think the margins are pretty fine. I had Slavin second, by the way.
I think Hughes puts the Canucks on his back this season and has a monster year. But Makar, I mean, you see the way his hips move and how he can dive into the offensive zone. It is incredibly impressive. What about Jack Adams?
The kiss of death?
Yes.
I had Marty St. Louis.
Really? Interesting. I had Andre Tournier from Utah.
Coach. No, I'm serious. They're both in the same position, right? Yeah. Utah just missed the playoffs, and St. Louis and the Canadiens just got in the playoffs. They both need to take a huge step. I think Marty's going to take it. Like we've talked about Demidov. You just talked about where they are contract-wise. I talked to a couple of people at Player Media Tour that said Slavkovsky is going to take a huge jump this year. You know, they added on their blue line with Dobson. I just think that they're in a much better place than they were last year.
Well, I think... Actually, I picked them to miss the playoffs this year. And it's not necessarily that I don't think highly of the team. I just think that they jumped so high after the Four Nations last year. And if they level off a little bit here, I think it could catch up with them. It almost mean like, you know, one step back to take two steps forward again. So I do wonder about the Canadians this year. Tournier, there's pressure points on them too. There's pressure on the Mammoth now. Like we talked about it with Nick, right? No excuses. That's where they're at right now. But I think this guy has been a really good coach for them through the last few years, through a lot of changes, through a lot of adversity. And now it's a chance for him to be able to celebrate his coaching ability on a higher plane. And I look forward to him being able to do that. Vezina Trophy. He allowed one goal in the season opener, and they lost. I had Igor Shesterkin.
Well, that's going to be quite the bounce back from last year. So hopefully that happens. I think the Rangers are going to need it. I had Vasilevsky. The injuries that he was dealing with in the preseason concern me a little bit. But if Tampa Bay is going to be any good, which I think they are, I think Vasilevsky's going to have to be at his best. I don't think Tampa's as good a team as they've been in the past, but I'm still pretty bullish on him, and it's mostly because of Vasilevsky. I think he, and no disrespect to Connor Hellebuck, who's won it the last 2 years, I think Vasilevsky's the best goalie in the league.
Yeah, listen, he was number two on my list. For Shesterkin, I think he has an understanding of how good he has to be for the New York Rangers, and I think he's going to thrive in that, and it wasn't a great year for him last year. I sense a hunger with him to bounce back for it this year. So I have him. Hart Trophy.
By the way, we're both contrarians because Connor Hellebuck won our 15-voter pool over in a major way. We may have been two of the three that didn't vote Connor number one. Right. So for the people listening to this podcast who are like, what the hell is going on with NHL.com? What the hell's going on with Dan and Sean, because everybody else is in lockstep and nobody's getting off the Connor bandwagon yet.
Yeah, and you got to go to NHL.com to see all these trophy trackers. We've got them all up. It's Wednesday. Today we got the Jack Adams up. Mike Sullivan's the guy, you know, and neither one of us had Mike Sullivan as the Jack Adams winner, although I did have him number two on my list. And again, not a great start for the Rangers and their coach, but I think he's that good of a coach that he's going to be able to push this team in the right direction. I'm not going to overreact. Like he said, I'm not going to overreact on one game. Hart Trophy. Where'd you go?
Kucherov.
Okay. It's fine. Not going to argue with that. Two-time, back-to-back Hart Ross Trophy winner. You said Tampa is not, you don't think Tampa's as good as everyone says. I think they're really good.
I don't.
That team's excellent.
I don't think... I think they're as good as everyone says. I don't think they're as good as they have been. I think the years of winning have worn on them a little bit as far as their player pool. Their top-end talent is still ridiculous, right? You look at Vasilevsky, you look at Hedman, you look at Kucherov, Point, Hagel, all those guys. Like, they're still right there. But depth-wise, it's a little more concerning.
Yeah. Well, I had Connor McDavid. So, chalk.
I did not.
But although we've had, I will tell you,
we've had this conversation 9 trillion times.
I know,
but he's the best player in the league. He's not the most valuable player in the league.
So I will tell you this: the upset special for me is that I didn't even have Kucherov in my top five, and I think he's terrific. But I had McDavid 1, Eichel 2, MacKinnon 3, Kaprizov 4, and Clayton Keller 5.
You should go to Vegas. You could make some money with that last one. But look,
he had a 90-point year last year.
We're very but it's a popularity contest.
Well,
the Hart Trophy voting is a popularity.
Well, contest. I know Keller's not going to win it, but I didn't have him winning it either, by the way. So I had him at fifth.
He won't be in the top 10. Even if he has another 90-point year, even if he has a 100-point year, he won't be in the top 10 because it takes 2 years for everybody to catch up to it.
Yeah, you know what, though? If Utah makes the playoffs and he's their leading scorer with between 90 and 100 points, he deserves to be in the top 10.
He deserves to
be in the top 5.
Of course he does, but that's not the way this works.
No, I understand. Well, there's our trophy trackers. We have some disagreements, and you can read them all on NHL.com to see what the entire group selection was for each of them: the Calder Trophy, the Norris Trophy, Jack Adams, Vezina, and Hart. This was a lot of fun. We thank Nick Katsunika. We thank Tom Galitti. And Sean, I thank you for dealing with me.
It's the burden that I have to bear to do this, and I accept it willingly.
Yeah. I appreciate that. I appreciate that. I don't know if it's willingly, though, I will say.
Oh, this is the highlight of my week every week, Dan. I can't wait to do it for another season.
Well, we'll be doing it again next week. We'll be back next Wednesday with more NHL at the Rink. Until then, enjoy the hockey.